Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lau. I got to try Game of Thrones, the living card game.
How was that?
It was fun. It was actually similar to Legends of the Five Rings, or it has enough similarities that you would say it's similar. Duh, that makes no sense.
Which is why you use the word similarities?
Yeah. Where you can pick up one if you know the other, but different enough that you could actually have both games, and it would be a different play experience.
Right.
And in all honesty, they're similar enough to Magic. Instead of tapping, untapping, of course, L5R uses bowing, unbowed.
You know? Right.
And Game of Thrones uses kneeled, standing. Mm. So, yeah. Mm. That makes sense. And then I was like, okay, I was going to play. They had this group of players, and they all have different houses that they are. And Greyjoy just happens to be not a primary house for anybody. And so I played them, and they were fun to play. And I do like Theon. He's one of my favorite characters in the series. So one of the guys recommended some links to look at, you know, just like, oh, here's some different ways to build some decks and kind of their play style. It was really helpful.
Right.
And all the different chapter packs. And if people are not familiar with a living card game, it's quote-unquote cheaper than collectible card games, because you buy your main set, and then you also recommended to buy the set, a set that's related to these houses. And then they have these chaptered packs.
Which they say you don't have to buy all of.
Which fair enough. So, and there's like so many chapter packs for Game of Thrones right now. And I go through this list, and I'm just going, okay, I'll only get the chapter packs that are on this list. And I print it out and got my checklist. And gosh, $250 later.
Holy moly.
No, 300. Over $300 later. I didn't order it. I was like all in my cart going, yeah, maybe I need to redefine essential.
Right. It was put out by Fantasy Flight Games, which is the same company who does Netrunner. And yeah, I mean, it's a living card game, which means you have the core set, and then instead of random boosters, they are packs of cards. And each pack has the maximum number of cards you can play in a deck. You know, so they're packs of 60 cards, three copies of 20 cards each. So, I mean, you buy one pack and you don't really have to hope that you get that one card you want, because you get them all. But, I mean, and again, they say it's not cardboard crack, but it is, because you're never not going to buy a data pack, or in the, you know, Game of Thrones game, you're never really not going to buy a chapter pack. So,
you know, until just now, I didn't actually know the difference between collectible and living card games.
Well, I mean, it is still collectible, because you are collecting the cards, right? The only difference is that they're not random assortments. You know what you are getting when you purchase the pack.
Yeah, and there's some cards that would only be one per chapter pack.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So you know you need to buy three to get three copies of it. If you think you need that.
That's kind of cheap. Wow.
Yeah, they've improved it since the beginning. From what I heard, the original, I think it's called Kings of the Sea, and that's for House Greyjoy. Mm. And the original set didn't have three copies of all the cards, and now it does. But there's still, when they say, oh, you need to buy about three chapter decks of this particular one because you want three copies of this card. So.
Right.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, but anyway, I obviously went a little overboard, and there's certainly cheaper options than just buying chapter packs if you're going to play a house.
Yeah, buy other games.
Yeah, there's quit gaming. No, you can actually go online, and there's people that will, of course, will sell, you know, House Greyjoy packs. Right, you get all the cards to date, so.
Right.
So I might look into that. But I was kind of seeing, oh, let me try this way. I'm like, whoa.
Yeah, never mind. Yeah, we were discussing that earlier today, and I'm wondering if the same thing is going to happen with Netrunner, because currently there are many more cards for Game of Thrones than there are for Netrunner, where, you know, the packs are divided between the three runner factions and the four corporations. So there hasn't, or not that I'm aware of, I haven't really seen a secondary market for specific faction cards, but that could just be a result of there not being a vast card pool as of right now.
One difference I really notice about the living card games and the collectible card games is they don't retire cards.
Right.
Or they don't retire them to the point that collectible card games do. So they still stay in effect. So you kind of feel, well, I really want to have that particular Theon Greyjoy that was released way back in the beginning. And even though there's like two other ones, but all three do different things. So, yeah.
Some vintage Theon kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, but he also does a different thing. But they don't. Nothing gets retired, so everything is still legal.
Hmm.
Coming from a collectible card game perspective, you're used to things cycling out after 2 years.
Mm. Right. Well, Magic set the precedent for that, which is part of the reason why I quit. But, I mean...
Which is, yeah, on the one hand, it's frustrating. On the other hand, you're like, yeah, please. Please right. Get rid of some of these. But, yeah. But of course, Magic doesn't have... isn't tied to one particular setting, such as Game of Thrones. So,
Right. No, it's interesting. Like, I've been reading a couple, you know, blog posts on Netrunner, and I actually can kind of see why cycling cards out is healthy for the game from a certain perspective, because at least in, like, the championship decks for Netrunner, we're seeing the same cards again and again and again because they are just... so efficient and so good at what they do. And so far we haven't had, you know, cards that are better than, because you want to avoid power creep, but, you know, the game isn't really going to change and things are going to settle if people continue to use these cards only because they are so good. Whereas if this was like Magic and they cycled out after 2 years, the game is going to change. But, I mean, like, from a pocketbook standpoint, I am quite happy that they don't rotate out, because I can continue to use all my cards.
And which is... yeah, sorry, Chris. Chris hasn't played...
either of
Runner or Game of Thrones. So we'll wrap this up very quickly.
I'm still on, like, Go Fish.
If you can get in on these games, these living card games in the beginning, then it's really cool, because then it doesn't seem like a lot of expenditure. As long, you just keep up.
Hmm.
And the guys that are currently in it, they seem pretty content to keep up, and it isn't breaking the bank. It's just when you try to go in to enter into it, it's just like, wow, what do I need to do? And I mean, like I said, there's ways around it. I just, my first attempt was a failure, though.
Well,
and I'm looking at the chapter pack, and it's ridiculous, because it's like, and over 25 chapter packs.
Wow.
And people who play that, I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And that was what I thought was essential. And you're like, yeah.
Pare that down. Well, to be honest, at the time I jumped in on Netrunner, I think I dropped $160, but that got me up to date on everything. And after that, it's just like a bi-monthly expenditure of about $20, so it's not bad.
And Chris is now doing the beta for Skyrim.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah, in my news, it's not really specifically gaming, really. Well, a different kind of game anyway. But yeah, I got in on the beta for the Elder Scrolls Online, or the nickname Skyrim Online, which is pretty cool. It's got really good character creation screens. You can really customize your character a lot. But the gameplay is pretty... it's pretty standard MMO. Go here, kill this thing, come back. Go there, find something, come back. So...
would you call that the... I guess that is the gameplay. Or when you originally said gameplay, I thought you meant, like, controls and actually user interface and how you kind of got around.
Those are also pretty standard, too, yeah.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, point-and-click WASD. Mm. But, yeah, the graphics are really nice, and it's all first-person, so it feels like Skyrim. All the spells and effects look really cool. And all of the characters are voiced, so there's full voice acting, which is well done. And everything. So that's quite a bit different from, like, World of Warcraft, where it's mostly text. But again, it's just pretty standard MMORG fare. So if you like it, then I recommend it. But if you got bored of WOAD like the rest of us did, then, yeah, it's pretty meh.
I don't hear people mention World of Warcraft that much.
Well, there's a lot of competition out there, and there's so many now that are free. It's, you know, the people who are into World of Warcraft are still into it, but, you know, there's, for a new player, you can play other games that are just as good, if not better, with no cost.
Then again, I have a nasty habit of assuming just because I don't play something, it doesn't exist.
Right. Again, going back to card games, I was going to say, when we started playing Magic again, you're like, what? That's still around? And I'm like, duh. Yeah.
And then I stopped playing Magic again, and
it has
disappeared. I walked into a store, and I'm like, what? They're still selling this game? What is this?
Yeah.
didn't I bankrupt the company by
not buying it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
In this episode, we're going to talk about playing pre-existing characters and playing in pre-existing stories. We're going to talk about why and how.
Yeah, no, I thought about this topic after reading a blog post about the recent Orcon convention, and somebody, you know, ran a game with pre-existing characters in an established kind of franchise. And the blog post was about trying to strike a balance where someone who was unfamiliar with the setting and the characters could pick up the character sheet for a one-shot convention game and instantly know how to play this character and play them in such a way that was very similar to how the character actually is in the media. And I thought that was a pretty interesting idea. Never really wanted to play pre-existing characters before, but after playing Marvel Heroic role-playing, I would be willing to give it a shot. And I just kind of started thinking of ideas about why you would do that and how you would go about doing it, especially with the idea of getting a player who's not familiar with this franchise to still be able to play these characters and actually kind of, well, play them as the character is rather than the player's interpretation of the character.
Oh. So before we go any further, we want to clear up a couple similar concepts that we're not going to be talking about, such as the pre-generated character. And that would be something, you know, just from classic Dungeons and Dragons, where you open up the module and it's like you can play these 6-8 characters, or you can make your own. Mm-hmm. So we're not talking about that. And when we talk about the story or the setting, we're not talking about an established setting such as Forgotten Realms or the
Dark
World
Sun
of Darks,
like
the Dark Sun, thank you.
Sorry.
Or even the Star Wars role-playing game, or role-playing games, any one of those incarnations. What we're talking about is playing like the actual main Star Wars characters such as Han Solo, Luke Skywalker, or using Wayne's comic book example, Batman, Superman, Spider-Man,
mm-hmm.
as well as playing in existing stories such as the original trilogy for Star Wars, or something that Marvel Heroic Roleplaying was doing is like they actually took pre-existing miniseries and you would play in that, and that would be the module. So you actually knew how it ended if you actually read the comic book.
Right. Which Chris and I didn't, so that was totally fine.
Exactly.
So why would you do this?
Well, the first thing that jumped to mind as far as a reason to do it is that it would be really, really easy to get into the character. I can see this being really useful if you're doing con games or if you're introducing the game to somebody who hasn't played that specific game or is maybe new to role-playing in general. Kind of they're confused about how do I role-play or what do I do for this character. If you give them something, and again, if we're using Star Wars, you know, like Han Solo, most people know who that is and how they act, so you are Han Solo, have fun. It'd be a really easy way to kind of jump in and know how to play someone, or at least know how to have an inkling about how to act as someone else.
Right, I think that's a really good point, because, like, back when we started kind of gaming together, Lyle, one of the things you said that you did to get kind of new people at least thinking about the character they wanted to play was to have them think about their favorite character from media and then kind of use that as an archetype. And of course you told them, you know, to file off the serial number so that they kind of made their own character. But what Chris said, I see there being a lot of value in that. If you're playing an established character that the player is familiar with, they will have an idea of how to play this character and what that character would do in situations. And like when we were introducing someone to play D&D, it kind of turned into a joke, but he was like, well, I want to play Batman. And you're like, well, okay, you can't play Batman because this is D&D and this is, you know, fantasy and there is no Batman. But, you know, if you're able to do that, then why not let them play as Batman? Again, I don't mean in D&D, but if you're playing in the DC universe, let them play Batman, because they know who that character is, and they will know how to roleplay that character, even if they haven't played before.
Mm-hmm. Actually, in that example, I think we said, okay, here's how you can play Batman with these rules.
Right, right. We totally did.
And he was willing to play a fantasy version of Batman. So
right.
He wasn't being silly, but he wanted to play a Batman-type character in a fantasy setting. And it was a little bit difficult. And Chris raised this point before the episode when you're talking about how it can be very, very difficult to play a Han Solo.
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, actually, you know, Batman might even be a better example with that, because the Han Solo and Batman are extremely highly skilled people. Han Solo being, you know, the best pilot in the galaxy, and Batman, if you see Batman. So if you're trying to start a fantasy game, you can't really start off Batman at level one, because, you know, still ruffians on the street would give him trouble when the real Batman doesn't have that kind of problem. So as a game master, this could prove a little bit limiting, in that your stories might have to have a take on a higher level. And for that matter, if you have higher level characters, you might also have more complex rules that could be difficult for new players. But still, I think, you know, the main purpose of this idea is to roleplay more effectively, and this is, I still think, is a good way to introduce it.
I definitely agree, and it does get a little bit into how, so I guess I'll talk about what I would do in the second half of the episode.
And another why, and this gets me into more, why would you want to play the same story that already exists? Like, if you're, again, going to the Star Wars example, is why would you want to do the battle? Or why would you want to do A New Hope again? And the idea there is that, and this is, you know, is really related to fan fiction. Well, sorry, not the sexual fan fiction, but the other fan
fiction. I believe that's called slash fiction.
Oh, slash fiction is the sexual fan fiction?
Well, not necessarily, but slash fiction. I thought we had this discussion before. Slash fiction is probably most often like male on male.
Okay.
Not into it enough to know. Sorry, dude.
Right. Hey, somebody's got to class up this podcast.
That's exactly what
and
you did.
And you're doing it with slash fiction.
Right, slash fiction and my made RPG. All right.
Again, lost train of thought. slash fiction. And the idea there is that people, they read these stories and they want to fix them, if you will. Or they think, okay, that was really good how it was told that time. What if we change that? Or if you look at A Song of Ice and Fire, I mean, there's a lot of points in that story that kind of shock people. And people grow very attached to certain characters, and they're like, well, here's what the story would be if that person survived.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And somebody like Harry Turtledove has made a career out of alternative history fiction, so people really like that idea. You know, what if Hitler won World War II? What if the South didn't get defeated in the Civil War? A lot of ideas like that.
A lot of happy, fuzzy ideas then. Hmm.
When you were mentioning it earlier, Lyle, I actually thought of an idea of doing something like the butterfly effect, to where you take some kind of, I don't know, famous battle or famous instance of some case, and you change one small detail about it, and then continue playing to see how the story would unfold from there. For example, if Darth Vader hadn't cut down Obi-Wan Kenobi, or something like that.
Right.
Okay, that's not that small of an example, but
right.
Something along those lines.
You know, if Darth Maul had only fallen in one piece after he got killed.
Exactly.
You know? No, I guess, but discussing this before the episode, I wasn't really on board with the alternate history thing, because I kind of saw that as not playing the same character, but I kind of think I've come around to it, where, you know, the character has a personality, and so changing one choice they made, or changing the situation or circumstances so that something different happens, yeah, okay, you're still playing the same pre-existing character, right? You're still playing Luke, even if he decides to turn to the dark side at the end of, you know, Return of the Jedi. So I can see that. People do like their fan fiction, and, you know, people are incredibly protective over, air quote, their intellectual property or their things that they like. So you do get the people who are saying, you know, they did that wrong, they translated that to, you know, film wrong, and going back to fix things, air quotes, is another reason to play pre-existing characters and even a pre-existing story up to a certain point.
It can be fun. I mean, people aren't all that invested in it necessarily. They understand the rules of that world, and they understand all of the different aspects of that story. So it's very easy, very accessible, and it can be very fun to fix or change one thing and kind of run with that. So you probably want to put that one thing you would change right at the beginning. Right, you would, yeah. really would want to start at, like, on Tatooine and then play the three movies straight, and except Luke turns to the dark side at the very end. You'd be like, wow, that was a really boring 6 months. But yeah, yeah, I guess it was rewarding.
Oh, and now the game is over after he made the choice? Why did we even play that?
Join me. Okay.
Okay, game over. End scene. Good job, everybody. Yeah.
And again, this is also can be appealing for new people. I mean, sure, there's the obvious downside. It's not as, or it can, not as free as just any, your own world or your own story. But they understand all the rules. They don't need to have somebody explain, okay, this is what Greyhawk is. Okay, and here's all the different kingdoms and nations in Greyhawk, right? Mm-hmm. And this is, all these different character classes. It's just like, okay, you know, Song of Ice and Fire? Yeah. Did you read that? Yeah. All right, we're going to play in that world. Okay, I gotcha. What story? I can't imagine it. Like, where would we play? And it's like, no, we'll play that story. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll start here and we'll see what happens. Okay.
Right. Like, I want to play Aragorn. Great. Okay. And, you know, can we do what Aragorn does? Kind of, you know, wander
in
through
the
woods?
In A Song of Ice and Fire? Really?
No. come on, smart guy.
No, but you know somebody's going to do that. Did you read A Song of Ice and Fire? Yeah. So which character do you want? Aragorn. I'd like to see what happens if Aragorn was in the Seven Kingdoms.
Well, he's so...
Bilbo versus Tyrion.
No. He'd be so good. We all know what would happen to him. But now, you bringing up setting. One of the reasons, or another reason, to play pre-existing characters is because you like a particular setting, and the characters are kind of integral to that setting. Kind of can't really think of any example. Maybe, you know, if you like...
Song of Ice and Fire role playing, but...
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Like, playing... It's you can totally play in Westeros without playing as any of the pre-existing characters. However, the pre-existing characters, in my opinion, are so integral to making that setting what it is, leaving them out kind of makes it feel like you're not playing A Song of Ice and Fire.
Absolutely. I mean, if you wanted to play that Civil War and you wanted a real political character, then you could be there interacting with these characters, but you would kind of feel like I don't really have a lot of say.
Exactly. Yeah.
And,
exactly.
And a lot of control. And the actual role-playing game sets everything prior to the events of the series, which is smart, because then you can actually do things. And there were little things that happened, such as the rebellion of the Greyjoys. But yeah, if you were playing that setting or you were wanted to have an impact and you're like, well, you can steal the plans for the Death Star. Great. And then what? Well, then we're going to give it to the main characters and they're going to go destroy it. Great.
Right.
Thanks.
I got a little bit confused because I was still in Westeros and you're like, steal the plans for the Death Star. I'm like, well, how did that happen? Jeez.
Him in the wall.
Frodo. Gave it to Aragorn.
My only other one for why you would do it is you like a character, but we kind of did that already. You want to continue a story, which I think I mentioned.
A story, I mean, that is something that's different. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where like a game like Star Wars, the role-playing game, it tries to do is... I mean, I mentioned with the Death Star thing, but that was actually one of the ways they advertised the game, is someone had to steal the plans for the Death Star. Mm-hmm. It was something along those lines. But yeah, I mean, this gets into how, but like one of the things you can do is they play immediately after.
Right.
Yeah.
Or again, to continue the Star Wars example, I was thinking you can play in the space between Episode 4 and Episode 5 because, you know, they pick up in a different place and something has happened, but we don't know what. And, you know, it kind of doesn't really matter when you're watching the movie because the plot is progressing, but there is space to play in there. And then there's even space between Episode 5 and 6 because, you know, stuff happens. So yeah.
And between 3 and 4 as well, the whole Clone Wars.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that, yeah. So yeah. Continuing a story or playing in the gaps of, you know, a pre-existing story is another reason to do it because you want to see what happens and, you know, what you create probably will be better than anything George Lucas could come up with.
Oh, yeah. How many billions do you have, my friend?
None.
Yeah. Or you could play after A Dance of Dragons and have like a 5-year campaign, and you'll still beat the book.
Right.
Next book in the series, and you're just like, all right, look.
Yeah, but
dear
then
George George Lucas, George R. R. Martin, we've already like determined who the king is.
No, dear George R. R. Martin, we have killed off all these people in the campaign. You get a message back. Oh, that's exactly what I would have done.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe somebody plays campaigns and they send him letters, and that's how he writes his books. Why it takes so long.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, you know, actually, Wayne, that was what you mentioned before about how you might want to play as the character or kind of take the character as a template. Before, you know, this kind of branches into the how of playing, but, you know, I've never really seen how there would be much of an interest, at least for myself, in replaying a character the same way. Like, for example, if I wanted to play Han Solo, I would want to take Han Solo and then run with him in whatever way I could have fun with, rather than actually trying to be, I don't know, true to the real Han Solo in the movies. And I think that's something that you do too, Lyle, in general, with your characters. You base them off of media examples, like West was based off of Michael Weston in the last campaign. And also the guy from The Mentalist, I think it was?
Oh, yeah, in Changeling.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's something that I've had interest in doing before, but I don't know if I could really get into just trying to replay a character in the same way that he's presented in media rather than adding my own to it.
Fair enough.
How would you guys do it?
I was going to say, like, for me, it's kind of one or the other. Either you're going to take a character from pre-existing media and file the serial numbers off it, and then go a little bit further to make him your own creation.
That's a great line, by the way.
Or you're going to play, my opinion, you'd play the character as true to the character as you can, and... Mm-hmm. Maybe I wouldn't want to play that character, that pre-existing character, in a pre-existing story, because then if both elements are the same as what I've seen already, yeah, why am I playing this?
But you might just sit there and read the script.
Exactly,
instead, you know?
Exactly. But if I'm trying to play Han Solo as he's depicted in the movies in a new story, I would have no problem doing that. Personally.
Yeah, I could see that, yeah. But I think that's not really, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other. If it's playing Han Solo in a new story, then you're still adding in your own new content to it. So that's kind of where I was going with it. But
okay.
So your suggestion for a how, one how would be to take that pre-existing character and put them in the new story.
Yes.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. There is one problem. You actually brought it up, Chris, prior to the episode about power level.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
How that can,
right?
And we just going back to towards the beginning when we're talking about why, like one of the big appeals or one of the main reasons to do this and to play pre-existing characters or pre-existing stories is to make it easier for new players. But you brought up a problem with that, and that was
The example that you gave earlier, Lyle, about one guy wanting to play Batman. Oh, sorry, it was you, Wayne. But regardless, Batman is a pretty powerful guy, you know. He's got lots of pretty high-level skills going on. So it'd be really hard to recreate a Batman as a first-level character or as maybe a starting character in a point-buy system. And that could prove limiting to the Game Master because you can't really do a street-level story that easily. So it might kind of change what kind of a story you want to be able to tell with it. And in addition, too, if you're playing a high-level character like a Batman, it might also introduce more high-level rules or kind of difficult things that could add more complexity, which is the very thing you're trying to avoid with a new player. So,
That's a good point. I think if I was doing that, my advice would be, well, then let them play Batman. Mm-hmm. Because especially, after playing Marvel Heroic Roleplaying, the first time I looked at that game, I said, how are these characters balanced with each other? And I think it was Lyle, you said, well, they're not. They just are the characters they are. And if you grab Spider-Man, right, You're playing Spider-Man because you want to play Spider-Man, not because he is the same power level as, you know, drew a blank on what their Superman clone guy is.
Any other superhero.
Yes. Yeah. I realized that. Hercules, I realized
Doctor Strange.
Okay, anyway.
Thor.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Yeah, there's my non-existent comic book cred gone. I'm in negatives now. But, and after... Sentinel. I think that was the Superman clone. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Oh, the Sentry.
Yes. Captain Marvel. Yeah. I was really close.
Okay.
So,
because Thor wasn't powerful enough.
No.
Okay.
The Sentry was in my head, and I was drawing blanking on his name. But anyway.
Oh. Okay.
So after playing that game, I totally see what you're saying. The characters don't have to be balanced because the players just want to play as that character. And that's not going to work for every system, of course, because, you know, systems are balanced different ways. But if the player wants to play as a pre-existing character that is of a certain power level, I say let them, and just, you know, let the other characters play who they want to play.
I'm going to have to disagree with you a little bit. I mean, I agree that that you should say, let everybody go run, do whatever you want to do. But specifically in the Marvel example, you know, the characters are balanced so that you can have Spider-Man playing next to the Sentry, and they're still okay to play each other, even though their power levels are not equal. But also, you might run into a little bit of a problem with player expectations about what they're able to do in their imagination versus what the character on the paper is able to do. Again, going back to the example we've used a dozen times before, when I first played Vampire, I walked into an alleyway with three just regular humans thinking, I'm a vampire, I'll beat them up, and then, you know, proceeded to get my butt kicked.
Right, but so, I guess that example is a little different because you weren't playing as a pre-existing character. I mean, if you said... If you said, I'm going to play Dracula...
But that's one of the things. If you say... if I say, I want to play Batman, you say, okay, here's a first-level rogue, go play Batman, they might have a little bit different expectation about what they're able to do versus what a first-level rogue is able to do.
Right.
It sounds like you're actually agreeing with Wayne, because...
Which is exactly why I'm saying, let them play as freaking Batman, because then their expectations will match what the character can do.
Really? I don't know if first-level rogues can throw...
No, I'm not saying make the rogue first level. I'm saying you give them Batman.
Oh, I see what you're saying. So make the rogue 10th level.
Yes, exactly. Whatever you need to do to make them Batman, give them the ability to play Batman.
Okay.
And while you as the GM now have to adjust what type of story you're going to tell, the characters, the players' expectations match what their character can do.
Okay. And I was misunderstanding what you're saying.
Sorry, and I guess that does bring in the problem of, based on whatever system you're playing in, there may be more complex rules. I think it's mitigated a bit because if what the character can do matches what the player knows they can do, then they can just say, again, to continue the Batman thing, I want to, you know, bounce a batarang off this thing and hit the Joker in the back of the head. How do I do that? And you can say, it's on your character sheet. You don't really have to worry about how we're going to do it. I'm going to make it really easy for you mechanically to do that. But the fact you already know what he is capable of is reflected on your character sheet. Mm-hmm. And I think the player could actually learn to play the game maybe a little bit easier that way, because those two elements of the character, both them and how they know how to play the game, are in sync.
Yeah, and everybody loves doing upgrades too, so when Batman levels up and you get to choose new bat powers, oh man, that'll be fun.
And then you're Ultra Batman, jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that gets into... those are good points and further supports why you would do it. Because to deal with expectations and also to organically introduce rules instead of the person looking at a character sheet going, what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you're trying to coax them, well, what would you want to do? But they're still like, I don't know, what can I do? And if you went, well, you're Batman or you're Legolas, and you're like, all right, so I can hit stuff with my arrows really easily. And I'm like, yeah. And if they saw Desolation of Slag, Desolation of Smog, it's a bit ridiculous. So
great, I can skate down stone steps on the shield. Yeah, go for it.
No, wait till you see the movie. Legolas levels down.
Oh, really?
In Lord of the Rings, yeah.
Oh, in Lord of the Rings, he's leveled down?
Yeah, he's leveled down. Wow, he's getting leveled, I guess. Yeah. Wow. And it also deals with, some people do have a problem with games being too balanced.
Hmm.
And if you are going to play something, yeah, like Lord of the Rings, and somebody's like, well, I'm Aragorn, and the other person's like, well, I'm a hobbit, and I'm same power as you, 1,000-year-old elf. And you're like, why?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, imagine how that. How did this happen? You imagine lived that. In a hole for 70 years.
I'm
just eight.
I'm playing.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry to keep interrupting.
Sorry, go on.
No, sorry to get my thing. Like, one guy's playing as Aragorn, the other guy's playing as Fatty Bulger, the hobbit they left behind in Bree. And you're like, I don't really see how this is going to work.
That's all right. I don't really see that many people joining up a role-playing group saying, hey, I want to play Fatty Vulgar.
Yeah, but I guess kind of going back to the point we were making earlier, if they do choose that character, knowing what their power level is and what they're capable of, well, then there's a reason they want to play that character, and they probably will not, I'm not going to say will not, but, you know, they won't complain as much, because you knew exactly what they could do. You know, we kind of presented, you might want to play someone else. And you're like, nope, I really like that guy. I'm going to play as him.
So, are we at Bree? Yeah, I'm out of here. Actually, Wayne was just trying to get some credit back after the comic book gap. So he's like introducing like obscure Lord of the Rings.
Character. I was. Oh, you want me to bust into the Silmarillion now? All
right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, please.
Well, what I was thinking, one of the how ways to do it was to play in a specific genre, namely pulp. Because, you know, kind of the standard pulp characters don't advance. They kind of don't improve from one story to the next. They're very much set at a, you know, one power level that they kind of stay that way throughout the, you know, pretty much the entire run of their series. And you can also jump back and forth through time because pulp is very episodic. And, you know, once you finish one adventure, it's very easy to play another one, and you don't even really have to say if that adventure came before or after the previous one you just played. So, I mean, I don't see that being a really long-term game, because players do like to see characters advance and improve and get better, and they also like some story continuity, but that's another way to do it.
One way to do the how, and again, it wouldn't be playing in the pre-existing story, but was to do the idea of a year one. And Batman hit a year one, and he did get beaten up by just random guys on the street, so.
Yeah.
And you do that, it's like, well, yeah, we're gonna play Han Solo
X-Men
year
first
one.
Class,
or, yeah, X-Men first class, but they're still kind of awesome, but.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
Still got my powers, right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're like, okay, James Bond, but James Bond year one.
Yeah.
So you have all that potential. So the guy's like, well, I think I'm going to try to do this. And you're like, all right, yeah. Give it a go.
Well, that's actually also another good way to do it, because just because their abilities and skills are different doesn't necessarily mean their personality is. So, I mean, like, you know, James Bond being the smug, you know, sexualizing bastard that he is, you could still play that as James Bond year one. And even though he isn't, well, again, I'm thinking of like the Sean Connery, you know, once he doesn't do all that much spying. I mean,
he calls up Goldfinger and saying, "I'm with your mistress on the balcony, looking at you." Where? In your apartment. Oh, okay. And then the girl gets killed, and you're like, "I never saw that coming."
That coming.
Yeah, right. Like what?
Yeah, that was maybe a bad example, but you know,
Skyfall does a good way to do the year one, where. I think Skyfall is the best of the Daniel Craig James Bonds.
Okay.
Really?
Where it's a night. Wow. Oh, have you seen it?
Oh, yeah. I would very much. I love Casino Royale.
Oh, okay.
So much. But whatever, that's a later discussion.
Right. Where, you know, they name drop enough and you're like, oh, okay, it's kind of catching up to the story I'm familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that can actually be pretty exciting. Somebody's playing a year one Han Solo, meeting people that it's actually going to be quite important. Like Lando in that card game. And you're like, oh, this is going to be the card game. Where, oh, and I lost? What? I don't get the Millennium Falcon.
Nope.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be pretty fun. Well, that kind of gets into the idea of prequels, where we had talked about before, where finding out how you get to that destination can be really fun, even though you already know where you're going to end up. You know, so, yeah, playing that year one when you introduce those characters is a little bit similar. Like, we haven't gotten there yet, but I know where our relationship is going to go. You know, and let's kind of find out how we get there.
So, right.
I mean, it's a little less interesting when that relationship has already been plotted out and you know exactly how it gets there, because then that gets back to what we said in the beginning about playing a pre-existing character on kind of a pre-existing story. Why bother?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we already covered that and just...
Don't.
Change one element. No, change an element and then... Then part of it could be getting things back on track. If it is something like Star Wars where it's okay, or even Lord of the Rings where it's like, well, we got to get the ring to Mount Doom somehow. Mm-hmm. It's a shame that Frodo died. Yeah.
It's your turn, Sam.
Yeah. Is it a shame? Oh, sure. With a Hobbit, sure it's convenient. These eagles are taking us all the way to Lonely Mountain.
Can you guys hang around for the return trip?
Yeah. Yeah. No. It's right there. The mountain, right there. You guys can't see that?
3, 2, 1, drop. All right.
Well, I guess this gets a little bit into the mechanics, but do you think there needs to be some kind of, I don't know, mechanical reward or some kind of reward for having the player play in character if they are playing these pre-existing characters?
Yeah, that was something that we mentioned before, and honestly, I'm pretty torn about it. Well, I don't know. Like, in my opinion, like I said, I pretty heavily favor the idea of just kind of taking a character as a template and then going with it on your own. So I would think no, because that kind of might constrict a player to feel like they have to be the Han Solo rather than their own Han Solo. So if there are some kind of role-playing rewards, be they bennies or style points or whatever, I'd say just do them for good role-playing rather than for playing, air quotes, in character. It's kind of just my take on it, though.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting point, and I can see people splitting a lot of hairs because good role-playing is playing in character, so if you're not playing the character, blah.
Right.
but, yeah. But
what if they know that we know that we know?
Yeah, but if you're playing in a different story, like who's to say Han Solo wouldn't react that way? Or again, the example of Luke Skywalker, where who's to say if he's on the cusp of turning to the dark side, who's to say that just one more nudge wouldn't have sent them over?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, okay, I'm going to kill Darth Vader. And it's like, yeah, you know something? I'm just going to kill Darth Vader. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I'm angry. It happens.
Right. In case you couldn't tell by my angry face. No!
Yeah.
No, I think that's a really good point. Part of the reason I was thinking of it is that blog post I mentioned earlier, which was by Mike Olson, who works on Fate and is currently developing the Atomic Robo RPG. And one of the things he said in that blog was he wanted players who were not familiar with the setting or the characters. In this case, it was Sparks, Nevada, Marshall on Mars, which is part of like the Thrilling Adventure Hour, which is actually a really good podcast. He had said he wanted people who were unfamiliar with Sparks, Nevada to be able to pick up this character and play the character because of something that was present on the character sheet. You know, like the character's a lot of catchphrases, mannerisms, kind of things like that. And I thought that was really interesting. This was for like a convention one shot. Yep. And yeah, that I think that's really cool for someone to be able to just sit down, pick up this character, look at the character sheet and say, oh, I know how to play this character. And he built like a mechanic that, you know, rewarded you by refreshing stunts when you kind of hit these cues, and that kind of helped the player play, you know, in character.
Okay. I think Fate is kind of a very special case and a very specific case for that, because in order to build a character, you have their aspects, which are things like catchphrases, you know. So if you were playing Superman in a Fate game, one of your aspects might be up, up, and away. And I think it would be harder to break the mold if the very mechanical triggers that you're working on are those that are built into the original character concept.
Then again, like with Superman, and I know you're just throwing out that as an example, another one that we thought of prior to the episode was like Han Solo, like never tell me the odds, kid, whatever. But those mean something to us because we know who the character is.
Right.
So up, up, and the way, you'd be like, he can fly? Oh, okay. So he can fly. But it's not like you would play Superman unless it was like Kansas Farm Boy.
Right.
So I'm not too familiar with Sparks, Nevada. And by not too, I mean not at all.
right.
And it sounds kind of cool with the atomic thing, but if somebody handed me a character sheet with Sparks, it says Sparks, Nevada, that was a really cool name, and had some pretty cool aspects like Fate would have, I would play what I'm reading on the sheet.
Right.
If that was playing Sparks, Nevada, that's great, but I don't necessarily think in that kind of case that you should have to, because it's not a widely known character like an Aragorn or like a Tyrion Lannister.
Right. And really, if you don't know what the pre-existing character is, then it doesn't really matter that you're getting one.
Yeah, so I haven't read the blog, so I can't see the distinction between a pre-generated character mm-hmm. that has some interesting background ideas versus what's being offered in that case. And like Chris said, it just so happens with a game like Fate, you do have to put more personality information than you would in other games. Like, for example, in Dungeons & Dragons, you might even just leave the alignment blank for most characters and say, well, what kind of alignment do you think you should be?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Or you hand it to them, and that's a cue. And then you say, right, write the guy's name in. You write that in, but...
No, I think that's a really good point, and kind of the distinction, at least personally, I made between like a pre-gen at a convention and a pre-existing character was, at least for me, you can play that pre-gen character however you want. Yeah, maybe I'll leave the alignment blank, or maybe I'll leave some choices blank for you to customize or personalize that character even more to however you want to play them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But for a pre-existing character, and it wouldn't necessarily have to be Fate, it could be something like Cortex with the distinctions, or even something like Cosmic Patrol with the cues. There's these things on the sheet that kind of say what your personality is, and well, I definitely see your points, and I totally agree with them. Having something on the sheet that says kind of what the character's personality is, and then kind of rewards you for doing that, I think is kind of cool and interesting. But I could definitely see certain players not liking that and saying, well, why can't I play this however I want? Oh, I have to do these things
to get my powers back. I'm not saying that. Don't do that. I'm not saying that's a bad idea at all.
Oh, right, yeah.
I'm saying you're gonna interpret what's on the sheet as opposed to if somebody hands you, again, Han Solo or Tyrion Lannister, and you're familiar with those characters, you're going to look at the sheet to see what it says on there, but you're going to play what you watched on TV or in the movie or read in the book.
Like, right. Mm-hmm.
That's going to be your impression, and that's why, I guess, a pre-existing character in the sense that it's a very prevalent in other media has a much stronger impression in
right.
your mind or has a you have a much stronger preconception because you're not going to default to what's on the character sheet. You're going to default to what you've seen or read.
Right. No, I completely agree. Like, if I have no idea who this pre-existing character is, then yes, I'm going to have to interpret what these things on the character sheet is. And that's pretty much exactly what Chris and I did when we played that Marvel Heroic role-playing Civil War game. He was playing as Namor and I was playing as Doctor Strange, and I said, I know kind of what Doctor Strange is like, not enough to play him any other way than what I'm just going to play him as.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up that same point, is I had no clue who Namor is. All I got was, like, he's really arrogant, so, ha-ha!
Right.
I'm Namor!
Yeah,
hey, you guys did an okay job, but there wasn't any points in the story. Well, Namor wouldn't do that.
You know. No,
and that's certainly something to bring in. If somebody wants to sit down and play Firefly because they think that's kind of sounds like a cool setting, but they're like, is this a TV series? Oh, okay, well, I'll play the Heavy Jane. And then, you know, just don't bust the person's chops if they're playing the person a little bit differently because they're going to play what they see on the character sheet. So.
Right. No, that's exactly what I was going to say. I think if you do this, you kind of can't be annoying about it and say, nope, that your character wouldn't do that, you know, because nobody likes that.
And that's also something that you should be a little bit careful about, is some of the players may bristle at other people who are playing the character quote-unquote wrong, you know. Han Solo wouldn't do that, why are you doing that? I suppose, you know, if you're playing with a group of friends, that's not really a big deal, but if you're playing at a con or in a group of people you don't know, just something to be cautious of.
That is definitely a fear, and as we said earlier, I think, you know, gamers can be very protective of quote-unquote their thing that they like. So I could see sitting down at a Firefly con game and having a bunch of, you know, angry brown coats saying, hey, that's not how you play, you know, such and such. So mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you know, one thing though about the pre-generated character in the vein of Sparks Nevada, which I think is really appealing, is that it sounds like it has a lot of flavor, mm-hmm. which I think helps introduce people into, you know, bringing that to their characters when they create their own, as opposed to handing them, here's a you know, like a robot, or here's a electric superhero. Sorry, right. I don't know who Sparks about it, but
sorry, I should have said that before. It's the full name of the thing is Sparks Nevada Marshall on Mars. It's a futuristic Western.
Okay, and he's not a robot.
He's not a robot. He does have a pair of robot fists though.
Okay,
Jackson, Arizona, dinosaur puncher.
yeah, that's something like that. And you're like, well, that's kind of funny. I want to do something with this, and you know, it's the kind of limits that actually spark creativity. Yeah. Sparks. Yeah.
Hey, now just work Nevada into your next sentence and you're all good.
And just have subliminal messages in the name. Creative.
John, make your own character.
Yeah. That's pretty funny. But okay, I guess we've pretty much wrapped up how to do it. So, like,
nailed it.
Yep, exactly. Yeah.
Done.
So, of course, if you could play a pre-existing character or in a pre-existing setting, which one would it be?
I actually tend to like Marvel Heroic Role-Playing or DC Heroes. So,
right.
And I have no problems at all. And probably do have a preference of playing the pre-existing superheroes as opposed to making my own. And it's probably just because I read a lot of comic books as a kid. So... And when I play superhero games, I'm not concerned about leveling up or having a campaign. I want to tell that particular story. Mm-hmm. It could be multiple sessions, but I just want to tell that story. And I don't mind if Spider-Man stays the same power level in every story.
Or eventually becomes Cosmic Spider-Man.
Yeah. And then doesn't because people don't like that.
People didn't like it, yeah.
So I suppose that. I do like the West End Games Star Wars RPG, but we never played pre-existing characters in that one or pre-existing stories. So, although I did have an idea playing the original trilogy and running that, and the idea would be is that you actually don't play pre-existing characters, or I suppose you could, but you couldn't play Luke,
right?
Because of that moment in A New Hope where he races back to try to save his aunt and uncle. And he actually gets there in time, and the stormtroopers either capture or kill him. And then it's like, okay, we've got these plans, and then Luke's dead, so what are we going to do? Or captured. Yeah. And then they try to continue the story without Luke, and whether or not they would follow the same steps.
I think I remember you mentioning that before.
Yeah, but nobody was too excited about playing that, and I wasn't really too excited about running it. But that was one pre-existing story idea I had.
Right.
Yeah, I suppose for myself, kind of in the same way as you, Lyle, is that if I were to choose a pre-existing character, it would probably be from a comic book story, but it's not really for any of their personalities. It's more for to play what I would do with that power set that's already just ascribed to that character. Though, that said, I might take on Christian Bale's Batman just to have fun with the voice.
Who are you?
Kind of thing.
Oh, as opposed to your usual Scottish one. Okay.
Who are you?
Jeez.
I'm Batman!
What is he? He's the I'm what Edinburgh deserves.
I couldn't even hear what that
I'm was. The hero Edinburgh deserves, not the one it needs.
Yeah.
Or something like that. I don't think there's any characters that I would outright want to play as. As far as setting goes, though, I was thinking about it while we were talking. I think maybe I'd like to pick up a game of The Matrix after the first movie and lose the second two movies, because I think that setting is really rich, the inside of The Matrix, though I'm not that interested of the fight going on outside The Matrix.
Oh, you know what maybe, you know what reminded me of The Matrix trilogy?
What's that?
The Hobbit trilogy.
Because they're both trilogies?
You know what else reminded me? All of the trilogies. watch the second movie and tell me if you don't feel the same way.
Okay.
Yeah. What were you like, I don't need to see the third. No, I think I'm kind of in the same boat as you guys where, you know, after playing Marvel Heroic Role-Playing, I could play that again and would be happy playing any of those characters. Again, also from running pulp games, I could see playing in any of those, and I don't know, maybe it sounds kind of cheap, but I could see playing Indiana Jones, you know, because...
By yourself?
Exactly, yeah, at home, you know, this little choose-your-own-adventure book. Yeah.
What are we going to be? Room. Round? What's his name? Short Round?
Yes, you can be Short Round.
Ah, Indiana Jones. So we play like, who wants to be the offensive stereotype? Me? Great, thanks.
Oh, I didn't think I'd have to, like, you know,
pick and one. Kate Capshaw, what's her character's name? No one cares. Kate Capshaw, anybody?
He's a Nazi.
All right.
I guess you could play, like, his dad, Henry Jones.
I'll go back to Marvel Heroic Roleplaying, then. How about that?
Yeah.
Is that the correct answer you wanted?
Yes. Yes, it is.
All right.
All no, right. Who wants to play Shia LaBeouf?
Nobody.
I'm going to choose Connery just for the Scottish accent, because that's all I can do.
I do Batman, too. All right.
All right. Well, that ends our episode on playing pre-existing characters and pre-existing storylines.
All right, anyway, thank you for joining us again on Out of Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idlereredhands.com, outofredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website, or stream it through Stitcher or iTunes, or download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can also like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, plus one us on G+, or join us up in the forums and talk to us there. They are hosted by Happy Jacks at idlereredhands.com/forums, or send us an email at info@idlereredhands.com. Thanks again, and see you next time.
Bye.
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 Anyway, he wanted someone who plug, didn't... Plug, plug, plug. What?
it's like product placement in our episode. Yes, I'm just joking. I'm just joking. I'm enjoying a fresh, thrilling adventure hour beverage right now.
Smooth, refreshing Coca-Cola.
anyway. No.
Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week, and we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-Thru RPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.